and welcome to a very special episode of the Tech Gaming Podcast. We're in World 8-2. As always, I am your humble host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me are my friends, colleagues, fellow gamers, and all around great people. We'll start off with Sage. Samurage Morris Green.
Rock the Hawk.
You don't have a new slogan?
I don't need a new slogan, dude. Rock the Hawk is what you need.
Okay. And we also have Eric Blue Swim.
Yeah!
All right. Wow. Human beatbox. That was
I've been
great.
Playing a little too much DJ Hero 2 this week.
That explains it.
So, as I mentioned, I think we got a great show lined up for you this week. We got some game impressions lined up. I sent some DJ Hero 2. We got Mel Kirk coming back on the show. You might remember Mel as the voice of Zen Games, the company that is keeping pinball alive. And as always, we got some trivia and maybe just maybe some answers to your burning questions. Shall we begin?
Mm-hmm.
Put those fires out.
Let's
start talking about what we've been playing. So, Human Beatbox, you're up.
Well, as I hinted to, I've been playing DJ Hero 2.
Mm-hmm.
If some of you keep an eye on Cheap Ass Gamer, you might be aware of the $10 sale Toys R Us had on all DJ Hero bundles, Guitar Hero bundles.
Was that $10 for the game and the equipment?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Wow. That is a good deal.
Yeah, and I ended up getting the Wii version of it. It was the only thing they had, but it was the DJ Hero 2 party bundle, complete with two turntables and a microphone. For $10, I'll take it on the Wii.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
So tell me about Mixmaster Blue. The life of. How are you liking the game?
I think DJ Hero is less of a game and more of an experience.
Mm-hmm.
Musically, it's like I found myself, I mean, just a few minutes into the game, it's like I found myself kind of losing myself. Okay. Not to reference that Eminem song.
That's in the game, right?
Probably buried in the soundtrack somewhere.
I mean, it's been several months since I played the original DJ Hero, but they changed a few things or added a few things to DJ Hero 2. They've really improved the freestyle ability.
Mm-hmm.
It's like now you can like freestyle crossfade and freestyle scratch now. In addition to like hitting like the buttons, I think there was like a center column, you know, on the red button, you could hit like buttons at certain points and kind of customize or freestyle with like one of the sound effects. I think like, yeah, boy, from Flava Flav and stuff like that.
That's
and
funny. I can just imagine sitting there playing the game and you get these like Flava Flav comments in like your ears and it's just sort of, that's weird.
In the original DJ Hero, it's like you could have, you had like several different, I guess, like sound effects you could choose with the effect style.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you could set it to play, to just play, yeah, boy! If like you get like a freestyle, you know, one of the freestyle columns or whatever going, you could just go, mm-hmm. yeah, boy!
That sounds like it would become obnoxious for anyone else in the room.
Yeah, it was. Unfortunately, it's like, I mean, I didn't play a ton of the original DJ Hero. I mean, I played probably about 5 or 6 hours of it. That mm-hmm. was all I really used because none of the other freestyle mixes really, they didn't feel natural to, like, whatever song I was playing. It just felt like they were tossed in just to say, you can freestyle a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But now it's like they have certain columns that you can freestyle scratch in.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's
organic.
Yeah, I mean, it feels more like you're freestyle DJing than in the original DJ Hero. And they also added, you know, like a sustained note. It's not the long notes that you have to hold the buttons down for.
Mm-hmm.
They added that in DJ Hero 2 as well.
Mm.
And, I mean, it's, aside from that, it feels like the normal DJ Hero experience. It's like they didn't mess with the formula. They actually made it better. And that's not something you can say too often about sequels these days.
True.
Now, I got a question for you. I reviewed that. And I really liked it. But
mm-hmm.
the game itself obviously didn't take off if they're clearing it out $10 at Toys R Us. Why do you think it didn't connect with gamers?
I think it was the Hero name. I think
Guitar
Hero...
Huh? You think that was tarnished?
Yeah, I think the Guitar Hero branding and the hero branding and whatnot has just been run into the ground so badly by Activision that people just, I mean, even though it was an original idea, well, for the most part, I mean, I think Beatmania might have had the one up on them on a few things. But, I mean, it's like for a mostly original idea, and it's a good original idea on top of that. I think the hero branding was what killed it, because people were sick of Guitar Hero getting, you know, oh, it's June, it's time for a new Guitar Hero. It's August, it's time for a new Guitar Hero. I mean, it's like Guitar Hero Van Halen. I mean,
I think we talked about that a lot with Eric, what's his face? No. Was it Eric? Who is the guy we talked a lot about it with at E3?
I don't know.
Well, anyway.
Was I there?
I think you were.
Was that when we went out to dinner?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, I left you two guys alone.
But what was his name? It's Eric. I just don't remember his last name. But anyway.
He wasn't interested in talking to me.
Yes, he was.
No.
He wanted to rock the hawk.
Yeah. No, he was really thrilled that he got to hang out with us, because we all clicked so well. But anyway, his big thing was that the reason people got so sick of Guitar Hero and Activision as a whole and where they fucked up was that it became more about milking the name and getting money out of it rather than like coming up with innovative things. Like they just kept, you know, sort of putting forth these things like Clockwork with the idea of milking the name. And I think that's a lot of why people got sick of it.
Could we say that about Call of Duty though?
But don't you feel like Call of Duty actually evolves as, I mean, not every title, but like as the titles come out progressively, it evolves. Whereas with,
very slowly, you know, but I do think that there was, as Blue Swim just mentioned, some significant changes from the first DJ Hero to the second one.
That's true.
It was a much more polished game that really delivered that feeling that you are making a live mix. And I think that is a very an important improvement on the first game.
I think DJ Hero 2 is really good. I'm saying that I think that it, as a company, Activision started to become much less popular. I think DJ Hero 2 is a good sort of recovery. Like, I think it is really good. But I think that Activision as a company began to become so much less popular because they were sort of milking the same old thing for a while.
I think it's like the combination of Call of Duty, even though it's a great franchise and people eat it up with a spoon, I think it was the combination of the Call of Duty and Guitar Hero that really destroyed Activision's good name, relatively good name in the gaming community. Even though the games were good, they were still just getting released way too much. And I think Guitar Hero was worse off than Call of Duty was. I mean, people still aren't tired of Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
Guitar Hero, it's like, there wasn't a lot that they did with their retail releases that they couldn't have done through downloadable content.
Mm-hmm.
And their lack of willingness to adapt to the DLC model that Rock Band uses, I think that's what killed the Guitar Hero franchise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Go ahead.
I got a perfect transition.
Yeah, go, do it.
Because we're talking about Rock, so I want to talk a little bit and kick things off. Talking about Rock of Ages.
Bum, bum, bum.
That's not that zombie game where you play the guitar and kill zombies.
No. No, that's not that one at all. That is Rock of the Dead. We won't talk about that.
Wait, you play? I didn't hear about that one.
Rock of Ages is the Atlus game I've been looking forward to for quite some time. It was created by the Ace Team. They're a Chilean studio. And I believe they're primarily comprised of three brothers. They first caught my attention by Adam Tidegear, his review of Xenoclash. And that was a game which kind of generated some mixed opinions. But I think that the consensus is going to be a little bit more forgiving with Rock of Ages. The game does have one nagging problem, which I'll talk about. But the whole idea, if you're not familiar with the title, is two players, and they can either be, you know, local, online, or a mix of human and CPU. You take control of opposite sides of this kind of winding playfield. And each game, it starts by allowing players to simultaneously build these defensive obstacles. So you put things down like turrets, these little cows that can push the ball.
Mm-hmm.
They're siege weapons, and they try to defend against the game star, which is this big round rock with a face on it. So once your team has built this big orb, they do this automatically. You don't really have to worry about that. You control it, and it almost feels like Super Monkey Ball style, the control there, on your way to the destination. So your destination is your opponent's this reinforced castle door. About three solid hits, and you can breach it. And that, you know, once you breach it, that allows you in. You can squash the enemy inside and move on to the next time period, hence the ages there. And you can also buy things that reinforce, like you can put spikes on the ball and different things like that. Now, let me talk about the problem. Now, the game's emphasis is on controlling your rock rather than the strategic placement of the defenses. When you put down items in certain zones, you can't put it everywhere. You know, there are certain illuminated zones where you can place it. You can't really waste your time about ideal placement. Otherwise, the CPU opponent will ram through your front door. Instead, the defenses and also the controls aren't really precise. Like I wanted to get, you know, this little, siege weapon at the perfect spot. It just, you know, really wouldn't let me unless you twiddle with it. So instead of defenses really kind of stopping the ball, the big problem is most of them can be overcome just by skillful jumping or even the use of shortcuts. And there are a lot of shortcuts in the game, which is interesting. There was this one kind of S-shaped curve, and it had this plateau in the middle. And what I could do is just jump from the curve into that middle plateau. And yeah, there was some defensive there. And then jump back on, and that saved a lot of time. What's interesting is the AI is pretty smart and will take those opportunities. And at the time in the single-player game, as you're playing, there's also there's a picture-in-picture, so you can see exactly what the enemy is doing. And often, I fuck myself up because I'm trying to watch, like, oh, is he going to get caught in these defenses? I want to see, you know, the effectiveness of them, and then I'm not watching what I'm doing. But anyway, in the end, the game is really just a rush to get in those hits before your opponent does, so it's less about strategy than you know, more action. But, you know, that could be my own taste. Now, that said, Rock of Ages, it's still fun, mainly because it feels very different than most games out there. And to me, it immediately channeled, I'm not sure if you guys remember that old Atari game, Rampart.
Do you remember that? Totally. I love Rampart.
You'd build, yeah, castle walls, and you'd kind of fix those up, and then you'd go, you know, attack. And it was just had that, you know, that same cadence because, you know, your action sequences, defense, you know, back and forth. It does get a little better when you play a live opponent, and it's definitely worth checking out. For some reason, like, the idea of running things over with a big giant rock just kind of warms my heart. I just dig it, like running over people. Like, every once in a while, they'll kind of squeal. And the presentation is definitely different. It's kind of Monty Python-esque.
Mm-hmm.
Without sounding too nerdy there.
I love Rampart. It's a great game.
Yeah, Rampart was awesome. That was actually one of the first PS3 downloadable titles I purchased. Just because
it was
one of the few things that were on there, and I love the old game. It doesn't translate that well. You kind of need the trackball to wiggle those things around, but that was a genius game.
What I liked about it was that it was simple but complex. Yep. Like, there was no element to it that felt kind of like over, like it was a game you had to think about, but never about the controls. You never had to be like, well, I'm not sure this is really gonna work, or I'm not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I liked about it.
What was the publisher on Rampart?
I thought that was Atari. Mm-hmm. It was an Atari arcade game.
Yeah, I thought it was Atari. I could
look it up. I think Midway might have had some kind of hand in it.
I'm not sure. I have an Atari collection for the computer buried around here. I might have to dig it out.
Here, I can look it up. Hold on.
So while we're doing that, let me talk a little bit about also Body Count, which I didn't get in. Yeah, I didn't get that in, but I played through three different levels now. I played 2 at E3 along with Sage. We got a private walkthrough there. And now the XBLA demo. And first, let me say this. I was a huge fan of Black. That was the Xbox and also PS2 first-person shooter that really nailed these, you know, over-the-top weapons. The levels are really wide open, you know, spacey. They were lengthy. You know, it took at least 10 minutes, you know, some 15 maybe to complete. And it also had a just amazing sound. Since Body Count was at one time or another referred to as the spiritual successor to Black, and I'm a big fan of the Codys, I've been keeping my eye on this one. I have to admit, at E3, the game didn't really hook me in. Maybe that was because, you know, E3 is not the best showcase. You know, I happen to play like 15 first-person shooters on that same day. And plus, you have like, you know, you're listening to these guys talk about the game, and then you get, you know, some stick time in, and they just throw you in the middle of a level, and you're kind of new, you skip the introduction, and sometimes it's an awkward experience to really get the vibe of the game if you don't start from ground zero. Now, unlike kind of the general public, I do think that there's room for a first-person shooter that doesn't try to go for this weird mix of like military authenticity and over-the-top elements, things like Battlefield and Call of Duty, putting them in that camp. Even though most may not agree, and by that I'm kind of referring to the lackluster sales of Bulletstorm and what was that other one? The Club.
Which, frankly, I don't understand. Bulletstorm to me seemed like a really solid, like...
Well, okay, here's the thing. It had, you know, the cussing everybody was talking about, you know, even we were talking about on the show, some of the terms that they used. Cliffy B was pumping it up. It looked good. And it was enjoyable for me.
We got a demo of that one, right?
Yeah. I played the full game until about three quarters of the way, and then I just got kind of bored with it. But I expected it to take off and to really kind of strike a nerve with people. So anyway,
Can I ask a question real quick? Because I'm curious about this, especially given that, like, occasionally on this show we censor ourselves, not often, but occasionally. Mm-hmm. And do you think, I feel like in video games, swearing is actually becoming somewhat of a turnoff. So my question is, do you think that that turned you off to the game at all? Because, like, Splinter Cell, the most recent one, I know I'm not the only person who sort of took issue with the fact that that the AI you had was basically just swearing at you the entire time. Like, they weren't really that, you know, articulate or anything. Did that turn that? Is that a deterrent for you?
I try to be as objective as possible, and I go into it, I thought that the swearing grabbed attention, towards the game, but I looked at it as, you know, they're trying to do something else and kind of create their own vernacular, their own language by making up these crazy, you know, cussing terms that just sound so vulgar. and I give them credit for trying to do something there. I won't knock them for, you know, for cussing, because I think it did have that original vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but one of the things about it was I recently played the XBLA demo. I'm not sure if you guys played that.
Which one?
For Body Count. It came on XBLA last week.
It
was a really off-putting demo, and I really think they're kind of pushing themselves into the ground with this. it's set in the shanty town, which isn't a location kind of shown by too many games. You know, Modern Warfare 2, you went to the favelas, Resident Evil 5, Mercenaries, and I think that's it. Oh, Fallout 3. Forgot about that one. Now, where the E3 demos were, you probably remember, Sage, they were set in these kind of bland but, you know, futuristic-looking environments. Do you remember that?
I do.
If you barely remember, they wouldn't, you know, they weren't jumping out
well,
at you.
Well, I do. They all kind of blur together. You know, what's most memorable about them is that they weren't really distinguishable or memorable.
So this one tried to offer something different, but unfortunately, it really looks like shit. I mean, the shanty town, it looks, a true shanty town uses found materials to build their houses. But with Body Count, the demo just looks like the designers just threw up polygons all over the place. I mean, it looks bad. Yeah, it doesn't have a nice look to it. It looks very chaotic. So despite this, I do like the way the guns feel. The game does this interesting kind of offset sighting when you pull back the left trigger. There, you're not looking straight down the iron sights. You're kind of looking off to the side of where you will shoot. And then it does this thing where
gangster shooting?
No, not like, not like Call of Duty where it turns. No, the actual, okay, imagine if you're looking straight down the barrel as you would with a gun. Instead, the perspectives kind of move just ever so slightly. And so that way the gun itself doesn't take up a lot of your room. So it's not tilted or anything. It's just like you're kind of turning it a little bit.
Okay.
So that makes
yes. Yeah.
It's a very un-gangster.
so probably, not gangster.
Probably very inaccurate too. No, one of the things that it does, it allows you to zoom in while you're zooming in when you pull the left trigger halfway, which works pretty good. Cover is kind of weird because you have to press the left trigger to take cover, and then you got to duck down. And most games, you kind of duck down automatically, and then you pop up, and it did things kind of backwards there. I do appreciate the ammo power-up mechanic, where you kind of magnetically collect these icons, and they give you perks like explosive ammo, even though in the demo it didn't really feel enormously explosive. It just made a different sound effect. But
excuse me, my explosive ammo is not explosive enough, okay?
Yeah, like, I expected guys torn to shreds by this.
Right.
They seem to go down a little bit quicker. So, So I was just looking. I just got an email that indicates we probably won't be getting a copy. They must be listening in. So I'll probably be looking for it, you know, like Drew Carey says, when the price is right. So, you know,
it's not Drew Carey. It will never truly be Drew Carey. It's always Bob Barker.
Okay. I just
want you got told.
Yeah, I just want to stay current and not appear like the old man, which I am. You know, people will be like, who the hell?
Oh, Deagle, you can't fake that. You're old.
Thanks.
Just kidding.
And why. So the last thing I want to talk about was one of my pickups today, and that was Mayhem 3D. When
I was hoping it was going to be Death Smiles.
Oh, no, I didn't put that in my 360 yet. But this one's interesting. Now, I was a fan of a couple of offbeat old school racers. One of them was called Demolition Racer No Exit for the Dreamcast, a little known title. And this other one, which I really liked, was called Test Drive EVA Destruction. It was for the PS2 and I also think for the Xbox. And those two kind of predated, we're going back to the Codemasters here, the Dirt series, kind of gritty, and these a variety of off-road series of events, where a lot of games just offer, you know, clean racing and stuff like that. This was just down and dirty. Now, when Mayhem 3D came out, I kind of immediately ignored it for a couple of reasons. One, it was put out by Zoo. I remember Zoo one time, they sent me four Wii games, and I think I reviewed them all together, and none of them scored higher than a D+. And so that kind of turned me off there. But it also came with two sets of 3D glasses, the red and blue glasses. And I don't know, since then it dropped to $20, and I followed up and I read some reviews, and they said that the core game isn't bad. And I have to agree. It's got four different events, and Mayhem, it's not as hardcore as I reviewed Blood Drive, which was an Activision title, but it plays a lot better. First is the game's Destruction Derby mode, which plays like the old, what was their name? Psygnosis, the old PS1 title called Destruction Derby, but with a much faster frame rate and, of course, much better physics. Another mode is racing around these crossover tracks, which are filled with these like T-boning opportunities there. And then another has these high edges where you can push opponents over. Now, some might be turned off by the game's kind of Sin City Mad World, this black and white with a couple of spots of color, that aesthetic, but it does give the game kind of its own look, and to me it was kind of an inspired choice for a racer, because usually I think, you know, comic book style, and I don't necessarily associate a comic book, you know, with a racing game.
I think off the top of my head, the only racing game, you know, aside from like a Mario Kart type, that have like a comic book style to it was Automodelista back.
Automata what?
I think it was Automodelista or something like that.
For
PS2. Like this,
Yeah, I remember that. I didn't pick that up, or I didn't play that, because I heard that the physics were just complete shit.
Yeah, same reason I didn't get it either.
Yeah, I heard like drifting, you either drifted all the time, or when you wanted to drift, you couldn't. Maybe it was real drift heavy. And that surprised me, because I think I saw it for fairly cheap. Now, was that Konami or Capcom?
Oh.
I'm putting it to the test.
By the way,
early trivia.
I want to say it was...
For the record, Rampart is Atari.
Yeah, because I'm
all right.
I know that shit.
So now that I've crushed your ego a little, Blue, go ahead and answer Deagle's question.
Crushed my ego?
You were wrong.
Let's see. What was I saying? Automatalista. Yeah, I never played it.
Okay, so let's not dwell on a game none of us played. So, I know that Mayhem, and it's funny because I think the box is Mayhem, but the actual, it's referred to as Mayhem 3D. You know, I don't quite understand the marketing there. It's not for most players, but for anyone who liked the titles I previously mentioned, they may want to grab it, you know, before it completely disappears. GameStop, $20. So not bad there. So that's what I've been playing.
Sweet.
Sage, how's law school?
Law school's great.
Great, huh?
I enjoy it. We'll see if I end up staying there, but for now it's leading me in a good direction. And if I do manage to make it all the way through, then, you know, Tech Gaming will have their very own lawyer and will have no need to hire anyone else ever.
But as I mentioned today, I'm beyond my years where I'm gonna get in trouble.
Maybe
it's just taxes.
Yeah. I don't know. No, I'm not gonna do tax, but
because that's boring.
It is boring.
It's a boring attorney.
Yeah. I want to save the world.
Okay, so you want to be a superhero.
Yeah. Actually, interestingly, I don't know how many people find this interesting. In torts law, which is the law of basically if it's not a contract and it's not criminal, but someone acted like an idiot and someone else got hurt, that's what torts is. Mm-hmm. There's a stipulation that talks about, you know, what the standard people are held to when they're determining negligence is, you know, what would a reasonable and prudent person done? But they totally have a section that's like inspired by somebody watched Superman and decided that we needed a stipulation just in case there's ever superheroes, because this section says, like, if a person has super normal physical strength or super normal vision or some such thing, then they are held to a higher standard of care than the rest of us normal folks.
But now, are those mutants or just people, you know, from other planets?
I think either. I think it's whoever you are, if you're living on our planet and you have super abilities, then you're held to a higher standard of care for negligence.
So, like, super reviewing powers. You can stay up till 4 a.m. playing Disgaea.
Yeah.
Which I got busted for the other night. The old lady said, "What the hell were you doing, giggling in there?"
Oh no, that's sad.
Disgaea 4. Yeah, no, that's sad. She probably locked me up and throw away the key for that one.
Did you see the premium unboxing? The unboxing, the premium edition of Disgaea 4.
No, I just got the regular.
What was in the premium edition?
Figurines.
Oh,
now, how did it look? Where'd you see this?
It was on Silicon Era.
Okay,
and they had a couple of photos of the unboxing of the premium edition. I saw it just before we started recording. I'm like, I'm going to have to send him a link.
Thanks for rubbing it in.
I love how often the premiere edition is like Arkham City, I put down $5 for it at GameStop the other day. Right. And they were like, you know, do you want the Primo edition? I was like, well, what does it come with? And it comes with like some nothing model. I mean, right. If you're super into like, I have to have every collector's edition, then I guess you'd get it. But if you're not, you know, like I don't get a collector's edition unless I think it's really worth it.
Or they throw it in for the same price.
Right, this was $90 for basically nothing. So I was like, so you want me to pay $40 more for nothing? Yeah,
get a Batarang this time around?
No, you get like a little figurine. That's it.
Of Batman?
I forget. Something crappy. Something that definitely was not enough to incentivize
Catwoman?
Me.
No, Catwoman? Halle Berry is Catwoman, maybe?
Was not that cool. And by the way, What's-Her-Face looks much hotter as Catwoman than Halle Berry.
Oh, fuck yeah. And Hathaway.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, she does.
She's not going to badmouth Halle Berry. I want her in there.
Great.
No.
I feel like Halle Berry Catwoman was, well, it was just about the worst movie ever. It's why she took back.
The worst movie ever.
It was pretty bad. Well, remember she was asking for more money to do X-Men, and they were like stalled in production because they were like, shoot, we got to find more money for Halle or she's not going to do it. And then Catwoman came out and they were like, oh, hell no, you are not high enough quality at this point, having done that movie. And she rescinded. She was like, you're right. I won't ask for more money anymore.
Sorry.
Google the room.
I love Halle Berry, but even I couldn't make it through a half an hour of that movie.
Right. No, I love her too. Like, I think she's a good actress, but I think Catwoman was shit. It's not her fault. It just was. Should I Google, Deagle?
The Room. I saw a midnight showing. It's this kind of cult favorite. It is the worst movie I've ever seen.
Oh, no, really? I've heard that, actually, I think.
You've heard of The Room? Yeah.
No, I've heard that it's the worst movie ever.
Oh,
yeah. Are we talking, like, good, bad, or bad, bad?
Bad,
bad. Bad, bad,
bad. Really bad. Bad.
Yeah.
Really awful.
I love a good bad movie or a good cheesy movie.
If it's cheesy in a good way, totally. But if it's bad, like, it's painful to watch it, not so...
If it's something like Street Fighter the movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme and Raoul Julia, I mean, yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Right,
like,
got camp
a live-action Cutie Honey movie or something like that. That was that was like Power Rangers meets...
Born.
Well, the TV 14 rating or something like that.
Mm. Anyway.
Enough Anne Hathaway talk.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why is she on the Batpod anyways?
Oh, yeah. You mean those released shots? I feel like if we knew, it would ruin the surprise. The point is that we don't know.
So one thing is, before we get into our Zen interview, I wanted to do a little giveaway here.
You know that I still haven't mentioned any of the things I've been playing, right?
Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay.
You never want me to talk about what I've been playing. Maybe I should just not be on the show.
Oh, come on. Don't threaten me.
That's not true. Stay with us.
For the record, did you not text or email me saying I didn't play anything this week?
No, that's not what I said. What I said is I didn't play anything with numbers in it. You sent out an email saying, let's talk about games we've been playing that are
that
numbers.
Was a joke.
Like number two.
Yeah, that was a joke.
I thought you were being serious. Well, how am I supposed to know that?
So what did you talk about without numbers?
Well, for the record, I did get Hell's Kitchen, but I haven't played it yet. So, dude, it was $4, and it's Gordon Ramsay. How could I not?
$4?
How could you not put that in your slot?
Gross. Yes, I would put Gordon Ramsay. I would put Gordon Ramsay in my slot. That's what I'm saying.
No, I'm serious. Like whenever I get a game, I rip off the shrink wrap and just gotta check out at least, you know, title screen.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, because I also got, and before that came in, I went to GameStop and I picked up Chrono Trigger on the DS, and I picked up Scribblenauts on the DS. So I've been playing those games.
Now, Scribblenauts, did you make it past the title screen?
Did I make it past the title screen?
Yeah.
How do you not?
You just get so damn absorbed into it.
Oh, I thought you meant like competent-wise. Was I able?
No, because I got stuck on there for like 2 hours. I was like, if I have a zombie and a vampire and I pin them together, who's going to win according to the laws, logic of Scribblenauts? And I got sucked into that hard.
I did play around on that for... Ew, gross.
Like Anne Hathaway.
Oh, God, I thought we were going to get off of her.
Never.
You never want to get off of Anne. Anne, we're sorry if you ever listen to this.
That's twice as funny, because isn't she playing a lady of the night in The Dark Knight Rises?
She's whatever she is. I mean, I don't know what you'd call her positionally.
I'm not going to say anything.
Well, some people complain that there weren't enough sex jokes the last time we podcasted, which I think is silly, but fine, more sex jokes. Your calls have been answered.
There you go, fuckers.
There you go. I did play a lot on there, but what I thought was funnier was going like in the levels and then doing effed up stuff, because there's people rocking around, and I thought it was really funny when they're like, I want a piece of candy, and I'm like, I'm gonna give you a bear and it's gonna eat you.
Yeah.
There's a secret way to get into the headquarters of the designers.
Mm-hmm.
In the game, which I don't want to spoil for people in case anyone hasn't still figured it out. But I got in there.
You write a review and you give them a 5-star rating.
No. In the game, you can go to their headquarters. And I went to their headquarters in the game, and they're all walking around, and I made a dragon who ate them all. And then they came back as zombies, and I made the dragon eat them again. And then the dragon tried to eat me, and I had to hide in a car. It was very entertaining. I liked it.
Sounds like a bad acid trip. But
It was great. I did get past the title screen. What I thought was really interesting about that game, and I don't want to talk about it too much because I know most people who are going to play it have played it at this point, but what I thought was really interesting was the fact that it makes you unlock levels with money, and the way that you win money is by playing the levels and then replaying them with trying to be creative and you know, solve them the three different ways. Mm-hmm. Without repeating everything, and then that's how you get more money. And getting money is how you unlock the levels. So the game really does encourage you and sort of give you an incentive to be clever and creative, which is something I really liked about it a lot, because I feel like that's not, you know, because a lot of video games are not about that, but a lot of games don't, you know, even in Splinter Cell where you have to be clever sometimes, it's not like, and now you need to go back and solve it again. It's sort of a, do you want to? And if you don't want to, you don't have to. But this really gives you a good incentive to, like, go be clever. So I thought that was good.
I love a game that just can create the story that you share with others, like you just did about, you know, going into the designers, turning them into zombie, or, you know, killing them with the dragon. Anything that can create this wild kind of narrative like that is cool with me.
Totally.
Is it easier to get a game like that from a sandbox game or from like a linear game that the developers...
Definitely, I think, sandbox game. Because if it's linear, it kind of takes something out of it, because this is something that the developer has created. But if you at least give that illusion that this is something that happened to you... then it becomes interesting. Like, I remember playing the original Halo and, you know, kind of manning a turret and taking out, you know, banshees and ghosts and stuff like that. And when you take them out of the air, they come down and crumble. And one of those, you know, just kind of fell out of the sky, was headed towards me. And at the last second, I jumped off the turret and it kind of crashed and destroyed everything. And just those, you know, those kind of random elements where they create these moments that you just want to share with someone. That to me is...
But I wouldn't call Halo a sandbox game. I would call it a linear game with a variety of options.
Yeah.
It's like you could play the same scenario in any of the Halo games 50 times over and have it play out 50 different ways.
I do think it goes from kind of almost room to room, even though if there aren't rooms, even if they're outside.
Right. No, and it
does adapt to you, so there is that kind of sandboxy element. That if you try to flank the enemies, you know, it's always been one of the smarter AI, you know, in a first-person shooter. And right. So it does change, you know, from game to game.
That's really true. I think there is a hybrid, though, between sandbox and linear. Like, I think, mm-hmm. you know, the Infamous is a real big sandbox kind of game. And I think that sandbox games sometimes are not actually they don't provide, I don't think they always do provide more opportunity for discovery and creativity, because I think they're limited by the, like in Infamous, you have all of the same, I mean, it's a fun game, but you have all of the same abilities and all of the NPCs sort of react the same way. So even though it's a sandbox game, you don't really have a lot of opportunity for new outcomes. Right. Whereas,
Maybe I should take sandbox out, because one of the things I'm also thinking of is a sports game. Like, you have this one just crazy play in Madden, you know, you're running the ball, somebody strips you of the ball, they pick it up, you know, they're running, you strip them of the ball, it goes back and forth four times, and you're talking about how crazy that would be and how, you know, never seen anything like that in real life. But you wouldn't call Madden necessarily a sandbox game.
Would you not? Maybe not, because it's a sport game. But that's sort of its own genre, sports mm-hmm. games.
Mm-hmm. It's like it's like anything can happen at any given time.
Yeah.
I think if they're well designed, the hybrids are the best. Like, Halo's a good example in that case, and I think when Splinter Cell deviated from, you know, they started out linear, but then later, like, around the third or fourth installment, they created an opportunity where you could take a number of different pathways to accomplish this. So it was sort of that hybrid feeling, and that was also another, I think, example of, like, really creative... You know, it gave you an opportunity to be creative and then share stories a little bit more focused. It would have to be with people who appreciate that genre, but it did give you an opportunity to be able to say, like, oh man, I totally snuck up on this one guy from behind the glass case and I tranked him and then I, or not tranked, but you know, whatever. And then I knifed this other guy right in the balls. And I mean, and then,
whoa,
you guys never
damn.
Did that. It's possible. It's doable.
I had a, call it like
a... Oh, you're going to say an experience where you got knifed.
Someone knifed you in the ball.
I had an experience
where I got knifed in the ball.
Oh,
balls.
My God. One time
in Atlanta.
In band camp.
No, yes. There was this one experience that I had in Splinter Cell Chaos Theory, mm-hmm. and it's in the North Korean level, the missile silo level.
Mm-hmm.
There's this control room where this, I guess you had to interrogate the chief of the installation, but he was in like this like little command room that had like two or three screens, and you could like run behind the screens and sneak over to the other side of the room, and then you could like sneak up and shoot out the lights or whatever. And I would take a bunch of the in-game soda cans into that section of the map,
mm-hmm.
and I'd sneak up around the main walkway corner, and I'd throw the soda can and would crack and destroy the monitor that one of the guards was sitting at. And then they'd go and start slowly walking towards, you know, the main hallway. And I'd run over to the other side of the hallway, or the other end of the hallway, go in through, like, the air shaft, sneak around back behind the three main display screens. And as they're walking around the corner, I'd hang out from the air shaft, shoot out one of the screens, and they'd flip out and say, what the hell is going on? And it's like,
right.
I was up till 4 a.m. just trying to get every single reaction I could, like knocking out some guys and leaving their bodies just right on the stairway. So like when they're walking around slowly, they discover it. That was an experience like what you guys have had, you know, where a game is linear, but you can also have like this, like a sandboxy experience where It's your limits are your your own creativity.
Mm-hmm. And the most recent one, I always forget if that's 5 or 6. I think that the AI in Splinter Cell was phenomenal, and I think it continued to get better and better and better, which is why it was so disappointing to me that all of a sudden it was like, man, they're stupid now. I don't know if I ever shared this with our listeners, actually, but I got to talk to his name is Stone Chin, which is just about the coolest name I've ever heard of.
That is pretty badass.
Right? And he used to work on the 360 team, and he switched over to Ubisoft, partially to, you know, work on, he really wanted to work on Assassin's Creed, so that's sort of what he's doing over there. And he's one of their PR guys. And I ended up sitting next to him on the bus from the Sony press conference to, where are we going? I think it was from Ubisoft to Sony, but whatever it was. And he and I got talking about Splinter Cell, and he actually asked for my feedback, and I sort of, you know, talked to him about those issues and, you know, how I thought the AI was dumbed down and it was much less of an actual, you know, sort of Splinter Cell Tom Clancy game and more of like a just sort of shoot 'em up kind of game. And he really took it to heart. He was like, he really liked my input, and he said that he was going to take that back to think with him. And I just thought, you know, that's so cool, and it's one of the most incredible parts of being able to be part of the gaming industry is that moment where it's like, I actually got to talk to someone who's involved who, you know, had let me have creative input, and it, you know, I felt like, wow, someone's listening to my opinion. So that was really cool, actually.
So Sage better be in the credits, Stone.
I better be in the, oh.
Special thanks.
Of the next one. Yeah, special thanks to Sage.
That girl on the bus with the mohawk.
Yep. Awesome. Anyway, so moving on. Well, I played some Chrono Trigger, which is great, obviously. And
for DS, right?
For DS.
I still need to pick that up.
It's great. We should. I'll wait till you pick it up.
I don't have that on,
at
on
all?
DS. No. I think I own it, just not on DS.
I don't think there's a reason to have it on DS necessarily if you...
Portable.
If you, well, yeah. Well, other than that it's portable, right? Exactly. Mm-hmm. But not, I mean, it's not like a, oh my god, you must have it on the DS also.
Yeah. Then they add like a little bit of extra content to the DS version. Or am I mistaken?
I haven't encountered it yet, so it means possible they, I don't know for sure. They may have. I haven't encountered it yet, but I only just started playing it. And then I played something else. What did I play this week? Crap. I don't remember. I'll save it for next week.
You played crap. So, interview?
Yes, interview.
Okay. Before we get into our Zen interview, I wanted to do a giveaway. Often, sometimes people send me hardware that's not so good and software that I probably delete from my computer as soon as I get it. But this week, we're giving away 5 copies of System Mechanic, which I use regularly. As someone who likes to keep, I like to keep my PC clean. It's the OCD thing. System Mechanic does almost everything I need. If it could eliminate, and I know you guys are listening, if it could eliminate orphan folders after a app removes itself, it would be platinum. Mm. But it does all the, you know, clutter removal, registry pruning, defragging, all that solid stuff.
Wow.
So if you'd like a license for all the computers you own, not just one copy, but you can install it on, you know, your laptop, your netbook, your desktop, everything except a Mac. Simply leave the name of a function that System Mechanic does for a chance to enter. Got it?
Wow, I want to win. Shit.
Okay, well, put the name of a function. What does System Mechanic do? Make chocolate chip cookies on my motherboard.
Didn't you? Okay, nothing. I'm not going to say that.
Done it what?
No, nothing.
No, I never made chocolate chip cookies on my motherboard.
Eagle, you've never made chocolate chip cookies on your motherboard? I can't believe that.
No, I get. You know me. I keep it clean.
That's true. You do hate the fingerprints, which I think is hilarious.
Oh, don't even talk about that. One thing we will talk about is let's talk to Mel Kirk about Zen Pinball right now. Hey guys, Robert here with Mel Kirk. He is the Vice President of Marketing for Zen Studios. He is joining us for, is it the second or third time?
I think this is my second time.
So one of the things I want to talk about was the success of Zen Pinball and Pinball FX. The studio seemed to have found a nice little niche without much competition, unless you include the endless, you know, permutations of the same Williams and Gottlieb tables. So are there any chances of maybe seeing a sequel to Planet Mini Golf or Flipper Critters, or is pinball the new direction for you guys?
Pinball is definitely going to be a mainstay with the studio. It's going to, you know, kind of be our bread and butter, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, we definitely have plans to revitalize Planet Mini Golf, so mm-hmm. to speak. Obviously fix the issues that there was with the game originally, camera angles and voice, you know, acting and mm-hmm. those types of things. But it would be cool, I think, to do a system similar to Pinball FX where you could, you know, have a free download and pick which courses you want to play and, you know, maybe bring over some branded content and whatnot. So the franchise is going to stick around and we'll keep working on it.
Awesome. That's cool, because I did like that particular franchise. That was one of the few golf games that really nailed the move support.
Yeah, so we actually got you know, quite a bit of praise for that, and a big boost when Move came out. We saw Planet Mini Golf kind of make a big resurgence. So I think it's still a game that needs to be in the spotlight, especially with plans for Move moving forward, and not a lot of good golf games yet for it, like you said.
Yeah, John Daly was awful. So obviously your collaborative efforts with Marvel have been a big success also for you guys, and you just announced Vengeance and Virtue a few weeks back, which brings a Ghost Rider table. Anything else you can tell us about the upcoming quartet of tables?
Not a whole lot, other than it's gonna release on XBLA and PSN to start this fall. And we're probably going to reveal the next character during New York Comic Con. So if you're looking for news on that, stay tuned during that event, and we'll likely, it'll come out of Marvel's camp, at a panel or something that they're doing, but I think mm-hmm. we'll reveal another character then.
Can you tell us if it's a hero or villain?
It's probably going to be a hero.
Okay. Thought so.
That would be one else. Yeah. So you're gonna have two guys on each side, or two tables that represent one, you know, two on Vengeance, two on Virtue. So that's kind of a hint.
Interesting. Now yeah. Beyond Marvel, has there been any other companies that have been courting a cross promotion? I know one of our readers and listeners asked if there's any chance of a recreation of real life tables.
So yes, on both answers to, you know, so those two questions. The real life tables, we're talking with the creators of the originals and working at the business side, and same with other brands. The marketing people, you know, that I'm on, we all get real excited. Let's work together. Let's do this deal. Like, let's sign it tomorrow. And then we kind of get held up in court. There's lawyers and there's business people who, you know, take hard looks at things and negotiations and all that. So mm-hmm. I'd like to move much faster, but it's definitely a work in progress, and yeah, there's some good stuff coming.
Just off the top of your head, would there be any tables, like dream tables, that you would just love to secure the rights to?
I mean, there's some of the old Bally's classic stuff, you know, all the way from like Elvira, mm-hmm. and let's see, what else is that? Well, Star Trek is a different license, but the original Trek table would be cool. Some of the Williams. I'm a huge Terminator fan, so I'd love mm-hmm. to do a Terminator table. But any of those, there's like really 10, I think, that are on our like huge wish list that we'd mm-hmm. say if we had these, like, this would really kind of, as far as a company working on the genre, this would kind of be a capstone. So now we've got like these classics, we've got our own developed, and then we've got like some of these mass markets. So we'd have a very well-balanced portfolio.
Sure. Very cool. Now, one thing I noticed was Real Pinball, since we're talking about that, was kind of designed to give players a little bit of gratification, then hook them and get them to drop anywhere from 25 cents to another dollar in the slot. Now, is it me, or were some of the Zen tables designed for kind of a lengthier play period and moving away from that, you know, you got to keep putting money in the table?
Well, I think it just kind of depends on what kind of player you are, really. Mm-hmm. Our really hardcore guys, yeah, they're going to play through a table until they've uncovered every aspect and they know everything that there is to do there. Mm-hmm. So we always try to keep the table really deep, and we try to keep it complex enough to where they're going to come back and there's a lot of replay value. But for the rest of the players, they're going to come in and spend maybe a couple hours, and they're just going to go for trying to beat their high score a few times, and they're really never going to uncover everything there is.
Okay.
So, yeah, we always got to be honest, because the hardcore guys definitely know, they'll recognize very quickly if we go shallow on them.
Okay. Now, can you walk our listeners through the kind of design stage? Do your tables start as these maybe impromptu experiments where you're trying out different design features? Are they already kind of like carefully drawn and then just coded to match those blueprints? You know, on which end of the spectrum do you guys develop
those? Well, it really depends. If we're working with a brand, take Marvel, for example, and like Spider-Man in particular, we'll go to work. There's literally a month process that we go through, just understanding everything about that character and their story, the villains, the different storylines, all the different fun components and objects in the world that would be interesting on a table. And then we try to figure out, you know, like in the case of the rails on that, we had web type rails. Like, so we knew, hey, if we're gonna have rails, they need to look like webs and behave like webs.
Mm-hmm.
What are the key villains? You know, Doc Ock and Green Goblin and some of these others, you know, we say, well, what can we really make happen, like in a good way on the table that will really highlight what those characters are about?
Mm-hmm.
So once we kind of outline all of those things, we pick who we want to work with and come up with some good ideas for ball interactions and all that, then we go to work actually putting the design together. Mm-hmm. So that whole month is just spent like being exploratory.
So brainstorming for a full month on that. Now, do you do some drawing and, you know, kind of map the tables out? Or
yeah, we map it out. We'll put some ideas down on paper. And we got to run stuff by Marvel, and they take a look, and they're like, yeah, that'd be fun and exciting. Or, you know, hey, what about this? And we kind of get all these lists of features that we want to have and the modes. It's all down in a design doc, you know, like most other games are done.
Mm-hmm.
And our design docs are actually, they're pretty hefty, 25, 30 pages.
Sure.
Which I think most people are surprised about when they hear that for a pinball table.
Yeah. Wow. Now, how much focus testing goes into the average table of yours?
There's something that we're doing more of. Mm-hmm. Are you talking about in terms of like having consumers come in and like play it and see how they like it, or the actual like quality testing and bug testing?
Actually, maybe consumers, or actually a little bit of both, if you could talk about both of those.
So on the consumer side, not a whole lot. We're getting better at it. The problem is with our dev cycles, it's an 8-month project for a table, so to speak, from like ground zero to release. And the table is still really kind of naked and not complete all the way up until like month 7. So you can really finally just do some real play testing and like see what it looks like with art and all that stuff really during the last month, which isn't a lot of time to go back and make changes and react. I mean, because the table's put together at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So that's difficult. But the bug testing, I mean, we try to test as thoroughly as we can, as with any game, and we got to go through all the certification processes and all that stuff. So the tables are pretty well tested. We do know that with some of them there are some bugs, and the reason why we don't go back and fix them right away is because that requires a whole new certification submission, which costs a ton of money,
mm-hmm.
which would basically make the whole project totally, you know, we'd make no money at all. We'd lose bad. So we try to make updates all at once. That's why it takes a while. But if we can do like 5 at once, then it just costs, you know, it's one submission.
I see. Now, one of my all-time favorite games, if you can call it a game, was Bill Budge's pinball construction set, and mm-hmm. which gave players kind of the tools to design and share their own, you know, elaborate tables. Now, with Sony kind of pushing this similar philosophy these days with Little Big Planet and Mod Nation Racers, and there's even a couple DLC games which do that, what would be the odds of Zen kind of handing over some of the master's tools?
Well, we're definitely thinking about doing that. Mm-hmm. I would say the chances of it happening are pretty good.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. It's a matter of...
I thought this was a long shot.
No, actually, I think it's something that we talk about all the time. We'd love to do it, and Pinball Constructor set was an amazing game. In fact, Bill just got I think it was on Gamasutra, great article about what he's doing now and, you know, his programming skills, and they reflected back on Pinball Constructor set. And there was a huge response to that from the pinball community saying, you know, hey, we need a modern day designer tool. So we have thought about it. We've talked about it. It's just a matter of, you know, how can we do it to support the business? Yeah, but also, you know, provide a really robust tool set so people could design their own tables and propagate user generated content. Mm-hmm. It's definitely something we're into. We did have a Planet Mini Golf, and it was huge success in terms of how many, you know, golf courses are created by users. So
Very cool.
It'd be cool to do. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to see something like that. Yeah. Now, one last question. One thing that has interested me is your Pinball Everywhere initiative, which aims to put the silver sphere on everything short of a TI scientific calculator. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. Our goal by the end of the year, we'll see if it happens or not, is to take our pinball model that's so successful on Xbox, you know, Pinball FX, like the free download with in-game purchasing, and just get that out as many places as we can. So PC, iOS, Android, 3DS right now doesn't support that free download, but they're telling us that they will by the end of the year. Vita obviously is coming next year, so that one's not going to be out yet. But all these different places put the game out there. It's awesome that we have the demand for it, and we're getting so much inbound email and requests for it. But we'd like to take the game everywhere.
Yeah, that would be great to play on the go. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, mobile, handheld gaming devices, PC, you know, hopefully whatever is your system of choice, you'll be able to get our pinball game.
All right. Everything but your toaster.
I'll throw the toaster in, too, if you want it. So I need a new one.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. And on behalf of our Pin Craze listeners, thanks for keeping Pin alive.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Ron.
All right.
We're back. Wasn't that fun?
Yeah.
I can always count on Blue for the yeah. Okay. So
yeah.
You guys ready for trivia? I thought I'd mix it up this week.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I'm ready.
So we're going to play Guess Who Said That. Now, the rules are simple and probably even sage-proof. I say a quote, and you tell me what famous luminary was behind that message. Ready?
These are quotes from video game personas, or these are quotes from developers and people?
What was the difference? Yeah, people associated with video games.
Okay, so not characters in the game.
No. Actual real life.
Real people.
Yes, okay. Real people. So number one, speaking on the games of this year's, at this year's E3, this auteur said, "It's not like those things are pieces of shit, you know. They're fun." Some of them are fun, so I think they're a necessity. Is that A, Jaffe, B, Molyneux, Itagaki, C, or D, Miyamoto?
I'm gonna go with Jaffe.
You're gonna go with Jaffe? What was it, the swearing?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And Sage?
I said Itagaki.
Okay, correct answer is C, Itagaki.
Really? I thought he only cursed when I was talking about Tekken.
Well, he's got to say tits.
E-tits, what you doing?
E-tits, okay, there you go. Number two, I didn't get a credit, and you won't see me acting again. Is that A, Bobby Kotick, B, David Hayter, C, Andy Serkis, or D, Lucy Lawless.
A.
A, you say? Bobby Kotick?
I'm...
So like Scooby-Doo?
I'll go with C.
You go with C, Andy Serkis. The correct answer, A, Bobby Kotick. Say,
damn it!
2 for 2. Wow.
The Hawk is rocking.
Yeah, it is. Number 3, I'd rather fail and try than just make another racing game. Is that A, Ken Levine, B, David Jaffe, C, Ed Boon, or D, Jeff Minter?
Minter.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go with A.
You go with A. Ken Levine, correct answer. David Jaffe.
Jaffe, you punk. Knew you were somewhere.
Number 4. This one should be easy. PS3 is a total disaster on so many levels. I think it's really clear that Sony lost track of what customers and what developers wanted. Was that A, Peter Moore, B, Gabe Newell, C, Kudo Tsuda, or D, drunk Kevin Butler?
Wait, what was the quote? Say it again.
The PS3 is a total disaster on so many levels. I think it's really clear that Sony lost track of what customers and what developers wanted.
And tell me the names again.
Peter Moore, Gabe Newell, Kudo Tsuda, or
Sonata?
Drunk Kevin Butler.
I see. I'm torn between Moore and drunk guy. Any drunk guy. It could have been anyone drunk, because it sounds like something someone drunk would say, like not paying attention. What do you think, Blue?
I'm thinking Gabe Newell. He's with Valve, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yep.
And it took forever for Valve to really do anything with the PS3, didn't it?
I'm going to say Moore.
Are you fishing for help?
I'm going to say Moore.
You're going to say Peter Moore?
Yeah.
Correct answer, B, Gabe Newell.
Dang. Yeah!
All tied up. Here's a tiebreaker. Number 5. When you take a shit, everything you've consumed is all mixed together. There are all sorts of things in that. You need me to say that one again? When you take a shit, everything you've consumed is all mixed together. There are all sorts of things in that. Is that A, David Jaffe, B, Suda51, C, Tim Schafer, or D, Al Lowe?
Schafer!
I'm going to go with Al Lowe.
I want it to be Schafer.
Correct answer, Suda51.
Damn it!
Come on, that was just so weird. It had to be Suda. So we got 2 questions.
Hear that, Suda? I just don't care what you say.
I do. Remember, I got shit. I'm a fanboy for waiting in line for him.
Oh, yeah.
One of the readers. Yes, I would still wait in line to see Suda. See, he's cool.
Oh, that's so cute.
He's awesome. He does his own thing. How many people in this industry just do whatever the hell they want and probably lose money in the process? That is amazing.
Yeah.
We got a question from Jeremy. Jeremy asks, I used to see a lot of people playing the DS in public. Now, not so much. What I see is people playing the iPhone, phones, and touchpads. Is dedicated portable console dead?
Well, if Sean Nola was here, he'd say fuck no.
Let me put down my PSP Monster Hunter for a second and answer this question. All right.
I have an Android and I just bought a DS because I don't think it is, because there's a lot of games that you can't play on an iPad either because they're not, or on a, you know, Droid or anything like that, because either they're not set up for it or because they don't have the rights to it. God, I'm just so inarticulate today. The old, like, Nintendo games you can get, what's that called?
Emulation?
There you go. I was like, it starts with an R. Even emulator games don't play that well on smart systems. So,
are they still smart if they don't play well?
No, I think they're really stupid.
Stupid.
They're stupid.
Blue?
I think there's, like, a different level of quality between the portable gaming and the mobile gaming. It's like, nowadays, it's the line between portable gaming and mobile gaming has pretty much blurred. You know, thanks to the popularity of, like, the iPhone and the Android and stuff like that. I mean, heck, my mom just got an Android phone. She wants to play slot machines. You know, I think there's always the experience, I guess, overall, you know, more overall quality that you can, that you just can't get from an Android or an iPhone game. I mean, it's like, if like Madden, you know, Madden on the iPhone. I mean, would you rather have Madden on the iPhone or Madden on the 3DS or something like that? A good Madden on the 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's,
you mean the two-player one that never came out?
Yeah, something like that. There's a level of quality that's just not there for the most part with the mobile games or, you know, the Android, the iPhone games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not that they aren't good. I mean, it's like I've lost more hours than I care to admit playing Game Dev Story. I mean, it's a great game, but it's not something that you could like really stick on a cartridge, mm-hmm. and, you know, slap a $30 or $40 price tag on. Oh. It's like the games that have become popular on mobile gaming have become popular because they're on mobile gaming.
You know what's interesting too is I was looking at the games on my iPhone previously, you know, which I had, and now Android, and a lot of them are American made versus what I've been playing on my DS, and most of those are Japanese. It's like the Americans now will put out kind of crappy ports for the DS, if mm-hmm. that, and we're not seeing a lot of really original you know, teams that are creating stuff for the portables. But one of the things that I got hung up on that question was the word dead. I think dead is kind of a misnomer in our society. I would have thought, I don't know, I saw an advertisement for like Charlie's Angels and, you know, there was that stupid Dukes of Hazzard movie. I was hoping that these things were dead at one time, but they kind of both came back to haunt us. There was a time when I was young in 1983 that consoles themselves were considered dead. All that I could play in this, you know, pre-NES era were computer games. But as we know from the crash, good things and even bad, you know, have a way of returning. And as such, I think we'll see dedicated gaming devices in the future, or at least ones that aren't a phone. But I guess all that hinges on the Vita's success, right? If Vita was to be a huge failure, that would kind of offset. We probably may not see dedicated portable gaming for a little while. I think it would go away, yeah. And then it comes back. You know, everything's in cycles.
I've been kicking around the idea of getting a PSP.
Mm-hmm. I think you should. There's so many really cool games.
Now, mm-hmm. is the one thing that's kind of that I'm kind of on the fence about is if I get it now, am I going to be regretting it with another price because there'll be another price drop at the end of the year?
Oh, that's a possibility. But
if you get PSP now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. What is the PSP, like
130, and they have like a entertainment pack that has Gran Turismo and MLB The Show 11 with a memory card.
Wow.
$30 more.
Yeah, which is really...
I mean, how much do you want one?
I've been curious about the PSP. I've thought about getting it, I mean, probably half a dozen times over the years, but it's like I always just reverted back to my DS. Mm-hmm. And it's like now I was checking out the PSP remake of Lunar,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of got me, you know, checking out the other games for it. And it's like I'm looking on Amazon, and it's like I'm seeing Burnout is $8, and Twisted Metal Head On is like $9.99 and stuff like that. And I'm like thinking that's it's like I'm motivated by price,
right?
By the price and the quality of the games I can get. And when I see stuff, you know, when I see like
is
I
that UMD get, like, or is that digital download?
I think you mean Twisted Metal?
Yeah, both those games that you just mentioned.
I believe both of them were physical, you know, the UMDs.
So here's the thing. If you were to get a PSP, I would recommend against purchasing physical media. And the reason why is that the Vita was confirmed as playing those older games. So if you were to ever upgrade and get that Vita, you know, you wouldn't have accessibility to that. And there's a lot of really cool games. Let me give a plug for Claydun X2, you know, coming out today, that mm-hmm. are download only. And there's enough of those kind of obscure niche games on the PSN where, to me, it's worth it.
I have been thinking about, you know, if I wanted to get the Vita or not, but it's like I'm looking at the prices of the UMD games, and then I check out the PSN price, and it's more expensive for a lot of things. I think Lunar was like...
$18 right. on Amazon with the UM, or, you know, for the UMD, or it's 20. The PSN code is $30 on Amazon for Lunar Silver Star Harmony, but on UMD it's $20.
I mean, that kind of shows the UMD is going to be viable for as long as you have your PSP, but hopefully the digital version will last a little bit longer.
I mean, my feeling is that unless there's a game you really, really want to play on a particular system, then you're better off waiting for new technology to come out. Like, I really, really wanted to play Scribblenauts, but even I waited until the 3DS had come out so that I could see how good it was, if I liked it, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then when I determined, you know, I'm not really a big fan of where it is right now, and I still really want to play Scribblenauts, I decided to get a DS, and at that point it was, you know, much cheaper. So if you have console games and you also play PC games, and you definitely have, you know, a lot of game platforms that you're into, like more than one, and you already have a portable, like you already have a DS, I would say that you don't need to get need being an operative word. If you have $1 million, get whatever you want. But if you don't need to get another portable, then I would say, unless there's a game you're just dying to play, that you should just wait and see if the price drops anymore.
I say drop the cash just for, you know, you like JRPGs. They offer a much better experience on PSP.
There is one thing that just before we were recording, I caught wind of, and I think you guys probably did too, is that Vita is going to get a new version of Persona 4.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Persona 4 The Golden or something like that, and it's going to have like 1.5 times the PS2 version's voice acting.
Huh.
I mean, it seems like it's going to be like the definitive version of Persona 4 or something like that. It's going to have a new character. I think it's Emily or something like that.
Well, and go ahead.
And it's like, I'm kind of thinking it's like that would be appealing to play. I mean, I wouldn't mind having a new version of Persona 4, but it's like I never finished Persona 4.
Right.
It's like I always hit a point in JRPGs where it's like the difficulty kind of spikes a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And
it means you're getting close to the end.
Yay.
You're a few bosses away.
That's true.
I don't want to say how long I was like stuck at numerous points in Final Fantasy X. Mm. I still haven't finished it. I've been playing it for 9 years. Well, let's put it this way. By playing it for 9 years, I mean I'll play it for about a week or two, then put it back on the shelf for a year and a half.
But I do think there's a point.
To 10 to.
I do think there's a point where it becomes a lack of interest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's like a lot of the problem that I was having with Final Fantasy X, excuse me, was that it's like I had to grind. And I had to grind, and I had to grind, and I grind, 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 grind. And it's like, I'm just like, I don't care anymore. I don't care anymore. Put it up on the shelf, and I'll pull it back out in a year or so when I do give a shit about it.
I think that if you really want to play Persona 4, you know, then there's that as part of your equation. And if you don't really care and you're okay with waiting, then that's the other part of your equation.
I'm in the first camp.
Right, well, of course you are, Deagle.
That's who I am.
I'd probably make our friends at NIS America really rich.
Yeah.
You mean Atlas?
It's like I was over at GameStop, and I saw ZHP, Unlosing Hero, or Unlosing Ranger versus Dark Death Man or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you pick it up?
I was thinking about it. It's like I've been cruising over the PSP library thinking, well, that might be interesting. If I do get a PSP, that might be an idea. I mean, I might want to. It's like I've been kind of like tossing games onto my potential PSP buy list.
Mm-hmm. That one, if you are thinking about getting a PSP, that one should be near the top.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
That's just me speaking. That's just me. You know, I'm a little weird when it comes to those type of games.
No.
I've also been thinking about the Perini games.
No, not so much.
Why? Deagle, you don't have love for the Perini?
Perinis are fucking hard. Perinis, you want to kill somebody.
Fuck the Perinis.
Yeah, no, the action, NIS's action games, I'm not a big fan of. I mean, they're good, and if you have superhuman, you know, reflexes and skills, you know, I guess this was the clause in tort law. If you have that, then go for it, but I don't. my skills when it comes to that are just aging.
So
I get through about three levels of the printy, and I just start cussing. And I don't know. It gets frustrating. More frustrating than fun. Anyway, next question. Comes from John Davis. What is the most embarrassing gaming thing or peripheral that you have purchased? I don't know what he means thing.
Say that again?
Most embarrassing gaming thing or peripheral that you have purchased.
Most embarrassing?
I think I've even answered this question on one of the podcasts.
I have the Super Scope for the Super Nintendo at one point. And
that's not embarrassing about
honestly,
that.
Honestly, I've been thinking about picking it up again because I got like one of those cheesy, you know, bright orange revolver shaped light gun things for the Super Nintendo. The
Lethal Enforcers one?
Is it
orange or blue?
It was orange, and I think it came bundled with the sequel to Battle Clash? You know, is that one with the robots, and it's like you're in one perspective and you're shooting you're shooting towards the other robot that's going like left or right and up and down and stuff like that. Oh,
don't know.
Wait a minute.
No. As he's checking, I'll admit to buying. I totally forgot the name of it, but it was a accessory marketed for Sega Genesis and maybe the Super Nintendo. And what it was this big heavy vest that was like a 12-inch, you know, just a speaker, just a bass, you know, speaker. And you would wear it, and every time like a gunshot was fired, you would feel it on your chest. And, you know, kind of made it interesting for like fighting games and stuff like that. But, you know, the technology wasn't there, so when you would punch, you'd get it hit in your chest. When they would punch, you know, every time the music would go, you'd get hit. And so basically, you were paying pretty good money. I got it on clearance, but basically to get hit in the chest repeatedly. I think that was the dumbest thing. And I used it for a couple hours before putting it away altogether because you look like Tron cosplay person wearing it. You know, like the world's cheapest Tron cosplay at that.
Speaking of which, there was some great Tron cosplay at E3, although unfortunately...
E3 or PAX?
At E3.
How come I didn't see any?
Because you're unobservant, I don't know. There was this one really hot chick walking around in like an amazing Tron suit, but what I was going to say is unfortunately it was all, like all of the people that I encountered that were Tron geared out were like... They were paid to be.
Oh yeah, those don't count. I don't even notice those.
Those don't count.
They don't count.
Dude, F you. If I could have one of those suits, I would wear it in a heartbeat.
No,
that
no,
counts.
No, no. If you're paid to, you know, I appreciate.
It's not legitimate cosplay if you're being paid to be there.
You can buy a costume in cosplay, okay? If you don't have time to make a costume, for the record.
But that's kind of the easy way out. I appreciate the cosplayers that spend time and energy and use creativity to create things. I think that is interesting. And somebody who just drops a check and buys that and pays some model to put it on, that's not really interesting to me.
Speaking of which, I bought a lot of the components, but I'm putting them together myself. Mm-hmm.
Sniper rifle.
No, I'm going to my very first anime convention, and I'm going to be cosplaying as Asuka Langley Soryu from Evangelion because she is the easiest thing for me to do, and I'm in law school and I don't have time to make a full costume.
So the easiest thing for you, that'd be like me going as Hitman.
The de facto. No, well, it's tough to find. I don't want to wear a wig because I like when you can utilize your own hair, and I have really cool hair, and I can't think of any. There's one anime character I can think of who has curly red hair, but she's the only one. So since Asuka has...
Or you can go as Annie.
See, it's an anime convention, so that would sort of...
Anime convention?
Jesus, that's terrible. That's awful. Anyway, if anyone thinks of a curly redheaded person, I'm open to being two different people on two different days, but for now, that's...
I'll go with you and be Daddy Warbucks.
Come, I'm going. It's in Denver, come.
It's original. Where were we?
For both of the people that care, myself being one of them, the game I was trying to think of was Metal Combat.
Oh, cool.
Metal Combat, okay. Sounds a lot like another game.
Yeah, that's what I thought when I was like, I think I got it when I was like 10 or something like that.
Did the advertisement, did they yell it? Metal Combat!
I'm looking at picking up a Super Scope again just to play it, and Super Scopes are like $40 with the receiver.
Isn't that funny how old Nintendo shit is so expensive because people have decided, like, oh my god, it's so retro cool, I must have it.
Yeah, it's it's like
shirts with Super Scopes in their apartments.
Anyway,
the thing with the Super Scope is it was, I don't know, maybe it was just mine, but it was wildly inaccurate.
Oh yeah,
that's part of the charm.
That's part of the appeal.
I'm pretty sure that was part of it.
Okay, because my NES Zapper was more accurate than my Super Scope.
Really?
This was generation forward. Yeah, my Zapper was pretty much dead on.
It's amazing how well the Zapper works after like 25 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Some good engineering.
But anywho,
let's take it on home. Sage.
For the record, I don't think I've ever purchased anything I'm embarrassed about, since that was the question.
But you did really want those Sims. What were they?
No, I have an S&M friend who would have got a kick out of me bringing him something stupid from an E3 thing. That was like it's not a real
trans vibrator.
Define S&M friend.
I have a friend who's into S&M. What part of that is difficult to conceive?
Well, I don't know if you guys, you know, play together or.
No, I don't. Did I say I'm into S&M?
Well,
no.
With your friends, you know, friends play together. So I thought.
I'm not. Yes. Well, this is not the Wii, and we're not playing S&M together. Okay, this is
a dominatrix like or the.
I'm not going to divulge that information for our listeners.
Tune in next week.
And two, I
Sector,
yeah, I'm
just
not gonna,
showed up in your house in a GIMP costume.
Not going to talk about my sex life.
The rubber ball.
What was that, dude? You sound like you have experience with that, Dingle. Anyhow, so yeah, if we're going to close it off, if that's what we're getting at.
We're going to put a rubber ball in the mouth of our host right now and close down the show. Thank you for listening. If you guys want to follow more, check out www.tech-gaming.com. Where you can
I wasn't caught. Hey, giggling, I was caught.
I swear to God, it wasn't a giggle.
Yes. The rubber ball was blocking my passageways.
Gross.
On that note, we are taking it on home.
Yes, please.
If you want to follow me, I'm Robert Allen, tech_gaming_blue. Where can they find you?
They can find me at BLUESWIM on Twitter. And if you're going to follow me from the tech gaming community, say hi. That means I'll probably pay more attention to you.
What were they doing previously?
Sending me just Google links that without saying any text whatsoever.
Those are probably.
Are you sure that wasn't spam?
Yeah, those are spammers. Yeah, sure. Are they pictures?
Sure, of spam, but basically, it's like
naked women.
I am happy to report that I have 10 very kind,
what's going on?
Very nice follow. People follow me if they actually want to, which I like.
Everybody follow Sage next week.
You don't need to. Dog. Shout out to my 10 loyal followers, and I think part of why people don't follow me is I don't really talk that much. Although if people say something to me on Twitter, I'm happy to respond. I just don't. I'm not a neurotic poster, so I don't get on and post every like 5 minutes.
Am I a neurotic poster?
No, because you have reasonable things to say, and you don't
using
post.
Those lawyer terms like reasonable. Define reasonable.
Oh, Jesus, it's happening already. Fuck. No, you post things that are not stupid, like I ate a sandwich 2 minutes ago.
I save that stuff for Google Plus.
Unless it's a shit sandwich.
Well, you do eat a lot of shit sandwiches.
Me and Suda 51.
Nice.
All right. So on that note.
Yeah, on that note, hello, goodbye, we love you. And, you can follow me at, since Deagle sucks tonight, at Samurage, that's Samurage, if you have any desire to follow me, you are welcome to.
Deagle sucks tonight. Why?
That could also be the title. Because you forgot to ask me what I played. You forgot to ask me
You're still harping on that? That was
you like, forgot to ask me so if I bought anything embarrassing besides 2 fleshlights, and you forgot to give them my Twitter name. Maybe that's why no one follows me. Maybe you never give out my Twitter name.
I edit that out of the show. Just for that, I will apologize, and you will be host next week. So,
cool. I haven't been
Sector,
host in a while.
Sector, tune in next week. And because you'll not hear from me, because I think it's going to be vengeance served, and she won't ask what I've been playing. or my
Twitter. Okay. Here's a thought. I'll be picking the mail questions next week, so you should here's what it is. If you Twitter me a mail question instead of emailing it the normal way, those questions will get precedence over the normal email questions for next week only.
Okay.
That way I'll get more followers. So if you
define precedence.
That, oh Jesus. F you guys. You know what? Come on, make up every moment. You know you let it on a joyful day. Try to put the bolt of a cooking on the go. But I know you say, I've been cuisine. Loaded, loaded, loaded. If we reach maximum capacity. God, I do. I want a fleshlight for both my penises.
There's the title, fleshlight for both my penises.
Nice. I love it when I come up with the titles. I love it.
My penal show.
My penal show.
Is that even
my penal code?
Yeah, bipenal.
Bipenal?
Yeah, how do we refer to someone with two penises?
I don't know, but I like
that. What is
that
the proper term? I don't want to offend anyone that I come across with.
Multipenal?
Multipenal.
Dual dick?
That's exactly what
you're a twin stick shooter.